Sri Ramakrishna used to tell a very nice story about Bhagavad Gita, that one man used to recite Bhagavad Gita, but he didn't understand, he says, he didn't understand anything. But when Bhagavad Gita was being recited, he used to shed tears. Someone asked him that, dear friend, you seem to be shedding tears while reading Bhagavad Gita, but you say you don't understand a thing, single thing. He said, yes. In fact, I have not studied Sanskrit, I have not studied philosophy. I don't know anything about that. But whenever I start hearing these words of Bhagavad Gita, the divine form of Shri Krishna, who is the charioteer of Arjuna, the disciple. Shri Krishna is the charioteer of the disciple Arjuna, and that image just flashes in my heart, and I cannot control my emotions. I feel Lord Krishna sitting right in me, and I get absorbed in that. So, if one has that feeling, that devotion about God guiding us, if God is guiding us, then we cannot go wrong. There was a nice saying put on one of those churches on the Hope Street, that if God is your co-pilot, better change the positions. That let him be your pilot. Let him be your charioteer. Let him be your guide. And then you cannot go wrong. We were seeing in our last class that the question was that we all, although have to go to the same goal of realizing our true divine nature, and thus fulfilling everything that we are seeking in life. This goal, although is same for us, the paths are varied, depending on one's constitution, depending on the variety that we see, the paths have to be different, and one must follow one's path. Need not get, or certain, it is more emphatic than need not get, must not get swayed by looking at the path of somebody else. One is, say, a householder, may get that idea that let me follow the path of a monk. That may not be constitutionally right for that person, but the charm comes. Looking at a monk's life, many feel charmed that look, what a life of dedication, and that is how a devotion should come in one's life. We should not think of anything but focus our lives on God like that, and let me take up a monastic life. And in contrast, he or she sees what is the scope in this life, continuously doing your family duties, running about here and there, and so many worries associated with it come, Not much of scope of being detached. In a monk's life, detachment is spontaneous, automatic. Whereas in householder's life, it is so very difficult to practice. So why not me become a monk? Sooner or later, that person, if that is not the constitutionally right path for that person, realizes that no, that was not suitable for him. He is not ready, or it is not his path. No path is of lesser value or of less importance than the other path. All paths are equally good for those who are suitable to go by that path. Like all different shirts are good for the person to whom they fit. Like this small girl sitting in front of me, the sweaters that they have put on fit their body. But therefore, if I think that, oh, that is a very nice looking, very beautiful, very good, let me put on my person, then not only it will be a problem for me, it will be that sweater also will get torn to pieces. It will destroy the sweater and it won't do any good to me. So, therefore, a constitutionally right path is to be seen. Psychologically, this temptation always comes that the other's path is good because you don't have to travel on that. So it is always good, you know, to think of the other's path. A fellow in the shop, that a shop was selling oranges, saying that it is $6 a dozen. Another person came to see and say, he started bargaining, why not $4 a dozen? That shop just by the side, it is selling $4 a dozen. Now this shopkeeper said, then why don't you go and buy from there? Go and buy from there. He said, no, the stock is finished there. Said, I will also sell my oranges at $4 a dozen after I finish my stock. So it's like that people can say so many things, people can think that other's path is good. Now $4 is good for that fellow because he doesn't need to sell. There are no oranges to be sold, so even if he declares them all are being given for free, he doesn't lose anything because there aren't any oranges there anyway. So, but for another person, that is not the right thing to do. So, constitution plays a very important role, that all paths are great, provided you walk on them. Otherwise, no path is path. A life of monk, if you just become a monk and do nothing about your spiritual practice, then you are on the path, but not going anywhere. The path means if you are going towards the goal and towards the destination, then it is worth calling a path. If you are not going towards the destination, sitting just there, or worse, going in the opposite direction, then it is terrible. Monastic life sometimes appears very charming, a great thing for those who are householders, because like that those oranges, that fellow doesn't have to sell them because they are not there. So the householders sometimes feel that monastic life is so nice because they don't have to live it. They are not living it, so it is very nice for them. The trials and tribulations of that life, the difficulties of that path, those who walk on that, they experience. So, therefore it is, walking on that path is important. There is a saying about monastic life, a great a saint, Sufi saint Kabir, has mentioned that. He says that monastic life is like climbing a dead tree, which grows straight. You know, there are no branches to hold on to. It requires very special skill to climb a dead tree. A dead tree, you have to, you know, there is a rope with which you have to, you know, keep on. It is a very special skill. Climbing a dead tree is very difficult. But there is a lot of those dates and other nice juices there. Take those juices. If you know that in India where these date trees are and places, you will see people go up and put a pot there. Like you get the maple syrup or something, so similarly there is a date syrup comes from the top there. So they put hang a pot on the top. You cannot get it from the bottom, like maple syrup, you can get it from various places in the stems. But no, here you have to climb the top, put it there, and then the syrup gets collected in it. But you have to go all the way up to get it. So, it is said that monastic life is climbing on the date tree like that. So if you make it up to the top, then you get that nice, sweet, delicious juice. But if you slip on the way, then break. There is not much chance of survival. That is your last climb, you know. That is, you won't be climbing any tree after that in your life. So it is... So that is how the monastic life has its own difficulties, own problems. So it is not as convenient a path as it appears from a distance. But that doesn't mean that the householders don't have much chance. They also have equal chance, if not more. They have equal chance of realizing the ultimate. They have a path that is for them. If they follow that path, then they will get to the same great goal in life. It is the question of traveling that path in the right direction with great determination. It requires determination. Whether you are a householder or a monk, you have to be tremendously determined to follow that path. And so we came to the question of Arjuna. After this was told to him, then Arjuna asked this question, that why then we do not follow that path? Who kind of drags us against our wishes in the opposite direction? If that path is very good for me, I know that it is great for me, I try to go on that path, but something, I don't know what, some other force on which I don't seem to have any control, that force drags me down, that force takes me in a different direction. And what is that? Who makes me do that? So that is the question asked by Arjuna. That the 35th verse of the 3rd chapter, 36th verse. 36th verse begins like this. Arjuna uvacha. Arjuna says or asks, Atha kena prayuktoyam papam charati purushah anichhannapi varshneya baladiva niyojitah. Arjuna said, prompted by what does a man commit sin, even though unwilling? O Vashneya, that is name of Sri Krishna, being constrained as it were by force, somebody kind of hijacks you and takes you where you do not want to go. You want to follow the path of righteousness, path of virtue. Nobody really cherishes this idea that let me become a thief. Nobody openly says or even feels that let me become a thief, let me make thieving as my profession, let me become a great cheat. Nobody thinks like that. Nobody decides consciously that let me be a good liar, not lawyer, liar. somebody said same thing, no. So, nobody conscientiously feels that let me tell lies, let me cheat others, let me do bad things, let me act in a way that is that takes me away from my ideal. Nobody wants to commit sin. But this is the situation in life. Even these nice small girls sitting in, they always want to behave good. I must behave good, I must be a good girl. But when I asked one girl like that, they had come with their school program. So, are you always well behaved? are you always a good, well-behaved girl? And she did, there she was quite honest, you know. She did, sometimes she behaves very nicely, very good. Sometimes not so good. She knows that, but she can't prevent herself from doing that. When this becomes a big disorder, then it is psychologically that names are there for that compulsive behavior. A person doesn't want to behave like that, but compelled by some force to behave in that fashion. It is a disorder then. But even without going to that extent, we all feel inside that we do not always follow the ideal path, although we want to. Somebody drags us. And this is a very important socio-political problem, a psychological problem that all of us have to deal with. That we all know that we should not commit crimes. Why? Still, there are, you see, the society full of crimes. You require lot of police force to keep those criminals in check. Then again, to supervise those police force, you need somebody else. Because the police force, police also are human beings. A big police officer was my friend. And he... not here, there in India, but the situation isn't very different. He came to the bookstore, was a devotee, so he said, and said that, can I just pick up the book and go away? Can I steal a book? And he said, well, you know, because... the police and thieves, they are on the same plane usually. Because, why, you know, he gave the reason for that. It is the company that affects. You people sometimes blame police for not being keeping up very high moral standards. But look, what company we are in. Are we in the company of saintly people? Whose company that we always have to be in? And thus that affects the behavior, is it not? So although we don't want to do bad things, something inside, as it were, propels us, compels us to do that. And unless we get a handle on that, we will not be able to really improve our behavior consciously. It is, then we require police to check us. Somebody else has to stand there with a rod, blinking lights, and then our driving is okay. Otherwise, it is, it has to be somebody, a police, to control us. Why? Can we not control our own behavior? Why do we not? So who inside us makes us commit things which we actually do not want to do? That is a very important question. This verse of Arjuna is very important, dealing with ourselves, dealing with others, that people commit actions which are against the ideal. That is the meaning of sin here. The idea of sin or crime at the level of mind is different. Somebody may not be doing according to the laws. Legally, that person may not be a criminal. You cannot catch that person in the net of law. Takes ample care, being intelligent takes ample care not to get caught. But that doesn't mean that the person inside doesn't know that the things are not right. Things are wrong for that person too. But only the law cannot catch it. So this problem is not just the behavior which is in society, which is penalized by law, but any behavior that is against our ideal, against the path that we have chosen, the direction that we know is going to make our life blessed. There is a goal that we feel, there is the right direction that we feel. Our conscience tells us that this is the right thing I must be doing. And yet, against all our wishes, somebody drags us, some force pulls us and makes us do things which are may not be criminal socially, but against our ideal. They may not, this Arjuna was not a criminal in that sense, no. He was a wonderful man. He was not a thief or any such cheat. He was not a social rogue at all. He was a nice person. Like any nice person in the society be, a wonderful person. But even though we are very good people in this hall, hardly, I don't expect anybody is a thief or a bad person. All are, in social sense, very good people. But they feel that their behavior is not always the ideal one. They are not always walking in the right direction. They want to go always in the right direction. Who wants to go in the wrong direction anyway? Everybody wants to go in the right, proper direction. But somebody, as it were, is pulling me and make me go in the wrong direction. Somebody on whom I don't seem to have any control. I even do not know what that is. Certainly, that thing is very powerful. It just pierces all my defenses and just makes me behave in a wrong way. Sometimes we do that behavior then becomes a habit. Then later on even the conscience doesn't prick us anymore. And we say, well, that is normal, that is very good. What is wrong about it? It is, this idea is presented here by Arjuna. It is not a socially criminal behavior that is just being spoken here. It is even much subtler, finer than that, the tendency. See, the behavior comes from a tendency. External behavior of a person may be a criminal, may not be criminal. But the tendency is there, and the inner result that one gets is according to the tendency. Therefore, in the yoga aphorisms, Patanjali gives a wonderful light on that. He says that whether the action is committed mentally or you just krita karita anumodita, whether you have performed the action or whether you got somebody else to perform it for you, or you have neither actively done it or made somebody to do it for you, but you have kind of, you have had backed that action, you like that action, you have endorsed that action. You might have just endorsed that action. The inner result remains the same. The outer results, of course, vary. The outer result, if you have not actively done something wrong, may not reach you to that extent. But if you have endorsed it in your mind, then the law may not come to you for that. You will not be punishable by the law. But your inner result remains the same, because inside you have committed it. So that is why we have to be more thoughtful when we want to guide our life to ideal. It is not the question whether we are caught in the net of law or not, but our behavior has to be according to the ideal, and therefore our thought process also, which prompts the behavior, has to be according to the ideal. So this is the question of Arjuna, that what makes a person behave in a way that is against ideal, although that person does not at all want it, anichchan, against the wish of that person, baladiva niyojitaha, as if forced to do that, somebody pressurizes, forces you to commit that action. What is that? A very important question for all spiritual aspirants. An important question for all those who want to take their lives to ideal. Why do we not follow that path? Or rather, many times, why do we go against that path? A very important question the answer to that will now follow. In fact, till the end of the chapter now, it is the answer to that. Arjuna's question is not an academic question, that who is that, who makes me do that, and just in one word, Sri Krishna will give the name. He is the he who does that. Academically, yeah, okay, the question, accordingly the answer is given, you will get, Ben, you will get full marks for that answer. Because that is academically correct answer. Who propels me to do bad actions? You write the name, some X, Y, G, John Smith. And if it is correct, you get the full marks for that academically, that's okay. But Arjuna's question really represents not just what is given in the words, much more than that. The spiritual questions are like that, that it is not just the outer expression of the question. It is not just the words, but the deeper feelings expressed through that word. Like the question, a great question. In spiritual history, you will see such great questions being asked on our behalf. They are the queries of all spiritual aspirants, but coming out through some mouth like Swami Vivekananda, Narendranath, asking that great question to Sri Ramakrishna. Have you seen God? What a great question. Have you seen God? Now, had that question been just academic question, yes or no, would have been the answer enough. But Sri Ramakrishna knew the heart behind that question. The question is not only to be answered, the questioner needs to be satisfied. The inner urge of the questioner needs to be answered. So Sri Ramakrishna sees the whole question, the heart of this young man longing for God realization. He sees that here is this young man who wants to see God. And so his question, his answer did not just say yes, it began with yes, but just didn't stop there. And it is very interesting that this question is not an academic one. There was, in Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, you read this question asked to Sri Ramakrishna by some others also. Similar words. Have you seen God? Later on, this question was asked also to Swami Vivekananda in United States. Have you seen God? And then his response to that was, do I look such a pompous fellow? So, it is, that was the answer given by Swami Vivekananda. When somebody else had asked this question to Sri Ramakrishna, Sri Ramakrishna just with a kind of resigned look said, well, the scriptures say that he is beyond all seeing, beyond all mind. Because that was good for that person. He didn't have that burning urge that this young man had to see God. This man, young man, had come to Sri Ramakrishna feeling that life is useless. Life is not worth living if one does not experience the God. Life is for experiencing God. And if we are not doing that, if I am not being able to do that, what is the use of carrying all this burden on the head? I am living, just breathing, eating, sleeping, excreting, and well, what do I do with my existence? What for my life is? So this tremendous, that urgency was there that I must make use of life to realize God. So this was being felt by Sri Ramakrishna when he hears this question, when he sees Narendra, that here is this man who wants to realize God. And so here Sri Ramakrishna's answer is completely different. He doesn't say, it is said in scriptures that nobody can see him and all that stuff. He says, yes. Yes. To tell Narendra, yes, God can be experienced. God can be experienced in this life. That is the meaning of yes. And so the answer proceeds further. I have seen God means you can see too. If something is real, then I can see it, you also can see it. But he again mentions in the next sentence that it is a little different type of seeing. You don't see that with only these eyes. It is, these eyes are too gross. They cannot see the God. You need a special microscope for that. Like yogurt has lot of those microbes right there. But we eat it without any problem because our naked eye does not spot them. So it is advised that don't look at yogurt with a microscope. Then you will not be able to eat it. There are so many those worms you will be seeing there. Now are those worms there or not? If someone who has seen the yogurt with microscope, if asked this question, that are there, have you seen microbes in the yogurt? Just as, have you seen God? Same question. Have you seen microbes in the yogurt? This fellow says, yes. Yes. But not with these ordinary eyes, you can't see them. You have to develop another, deeper, more profound vision to see God in you. So Sri Ramakrishna says, only I see God just as I see you. That means it is very palpable, very direct vision, not seeing something in dream. It is a very clear experience. And to show that it is more clearer than even this ordinary seeing, he says, only much more clearer than I am seeing you. What a great answer. And it doesn't just stop there. If you do what I tell you to do, you also will be able to see it. It is not a monopoly of somebody. Those who follow the path, they will be able to see it. Just as Mount Rainier, many people go there to see that very high mountain. Not all climb it, but many go there and see it. Can anybody see it? Well, yes, but not sitting right here in Providence in your armchair. Then you can't see the Mount Rainier, maybe except in film. But, well, if you want to see, if you follow the right directions, then you will go there in the state of Washington, and then you will see the Mount Rainier there. So, it is everybody who wants to see, and he is ready to follow the path. The two things are there. If you want to see, And if you want to, if you are ready to follow the path, then you also see, simple, it is the simple science, you see. Religion, spirituality is far more scientific than physical science. Physical science is not that scientific. There are so many foolish assumptions. Therefore, the conclusions of the physical science, they keep on changing. That is what is called progress of physical science. Progress means what? Progress sounds a very nice word, but what does it really mean? What I earlier used to believe, I do not believe now. That is the meaning of that. What I earlier used to consider as true, I don't consider it true any longer. That is the progress of physical science. It is not much scientific. It just toots that it is science and all. It really doesn't even justify that name. It is, physical sciences are so unscientific. I don't want to go, it is all a different topic. But they are very unscientific compared to the spiritual science. This is very scientific. This is a question and the answer. Here also is a deep question. Arjuna just does not want an academic answer that tell me who does that, who hijacks my conscience, but wants to defeat that fellow, wants to get rid of that influence, doesn't want to get hijacked anymore, and therefore wants to know so that we can follow our path without getting distracted, without getting hijacked to some other destination. We have to therefore look into this question deeply. Understand that as our question, that this is problem with all of us. So this question is to be understood not as the question of Arjuna alone. This is to be understood by Arunim as my question, is to be understood by Emily as my question. It is to be understood by each of us as my burning question. Because the answer of this question will open up the path for us to reach our goal. So it has therefore that tremendous importance. So now Lord Krishna begins the answer, answering not just the words of the question, but the psyche through which this question has sprung up, that psyche is being taken into account by this great teacher of humanity, Lord Krishna, the greatest psychologist. If you study Bhagavad Gita, you will see the tremendous psychological insights and how a person can thus understand oneself. There is no condemnation of anyone. All have to go on that spiritual path. We all have our faults. We all have our, problems. And we all have to tackle them. It is, our defects are all understood. We all are defective. Otherwise, there is no scope for progress. You know, progress is possible only for imperfect things. If it is perfect, then there is no progress possible. It is one reviewer of a book saw that the book is not very nice, but just didn't want to say that the book is bad. And the reviewers have to use good language. You know? So instead of saying the book is rank bad, he said that in the review, the author has generously left lot of scope for improvement in the next editions. So that is the nice way of putting. So we are all like that. Lot of scope is there for improvement. Once I had told you this story, but again, good in understanding, so that it is we understand that it is not for debasing or depressing us, but encouraging for us. It is my early monastic days. I was talking to a senior Swami, and I was feeling a bit dejected. Hey, what happened? Say, Swamiji, I don't feel I'm making any headway, any progress. And the same, this old stuff, those things again and again. I have so many problems, so many defects. Say, well, then, suppose, you know, if you had no defects, let us imagine, that if you have no defects, you are a perfect person. Then instead of keeping the picture of Sri Ramakrishna in the shrine, we would have kept your picture there. As spiritual aspirants, we all have defects. That is why we are aspirants. We aspire to get to the destination. The aspiration for getting to the destination means we are not at the destination. That is taken for granted. That is not to be, you know, we need not keep on brooding. Oh, I have so many bad things in me. I do so many wrong things. That is not going to help, you see. You accept that, yes, I do many wrong things, but let me find out the way. It is so. Sri Krishna is giving the answer to this psyche who wants to do good in life, doesn't want to just brood on the wrongs, that I have this defect and that defect and that defect, I am a sinner, a born sinner. Don't tell that, you are not anything like that. It is, you are struggling. And so, let the struggle. Struggling is the greatness of human life. Human beings alone struggle. The animals, other animals, their struggle is only for getting their survival things, subsistence for survival, and that's about it. Their animal needs, if they are satisfied, they are okay. It is human beings who want to go beyond that. That is why human life is full of struggles. Because, as they say, a man is not satisfied with bread alone. Some people jocularly then add, then you need butter too. That is the problem. But the idea is only satisfying the physical needs is not our goal. We want to realize the divine in us, that we are divine. That is beckoning us. That is telling us to, you know, progress. So Lord Krishna takes this into account while answering this question. And now we will read the answer. There is not much time today to discuss the answer in details, that we will postpone till next Friday. But let us in short read the answer so that we can think about it. 1 week is a good time to keep that answer being felt in our minds. So that we understand it better when we assemble here next Friday. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Lord starts telling. Here the commentator Shankara has pointed out, these are the words of Lord, a person all-knowing. There is no defect in that answer. There is nothing that Lord has no ignorance. He is omniscient. That omniscience is giving the answer. So listen carefully That is the meaning. It is not a speech of a politician that you can hear a few words and you know the same thing is being spoken of all that again and again. Nothing much there. So it is, this is a talk by Lord. A great answer to your question. So listen carefully. That is the meaning of Lord is speaking. Bible, in the Old Testament as and the New Testament too, you see these things that it says many places and the Lord has spoken. Or after giving a kind of message, says, I am the Lord. Why I am the Lord? Don't take this message lightly. This is very important. So Shri Bhagavan Vacha, the Lord says, in reply to Arjuna's question, who is that? Kamaesha Krudhesha Rajoguna Samudbhavah Mahashano Mahapapma Vidhyenam Ihavairinam. The Blessed Lord said, this is desire, this is anger, born of the constituent of Prakriti called Rajas, of inordinate appetite and most sinful. Know it to be an enemy here. That who makes you do all these bad things? The passion in you, which becomes anger. The anger is not different from the desire. The desire gets rebound on you as anger. When not fulfilled, like a ball thrown at a wall, comes back to you. Similarly, a desire not getting fulfilled comes back as anger. So, he therefore uses the same kama and krodha, the desire and anger. They make you do that. And how are they? Their hunger is insatiable. Howsoever you may try to fulfill the desire, the problem is desire is unsatiable. Go on, pouring various enjoyments. It only increases more and more. There is no way of fulfilling desire. So that is not the right way of dealing with it. Mahashano, tremendous hunger is there, unsatiable hunger. And it doesn't stop at committing any sin, the most sinful. So that is what makes you do that. And further thing, know it to be your enemy here. Know that it is your enemy, because many times we think of it as friend, That is the problem. And we get that Trojan horse right inside us and call it friend. So know that as your enemy. That is the message. The answer continues further, and we will discuss that by the grace of God next Friday.